So if you want to look young, you don't want to be, you don't want to have high insulin all the time. If you have high insulin all the time, means you have high glucose all the time, means you got these advanced glycation end products in your body all the time.
Welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Each week, renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica AI, Dr. Paul Larson, athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski discuss training, racing, and improving your health and fitness. Get ready for your journey to peak performance. Hello, and welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. We're going to get just a little nerdy today in talking about nutrition, because today we're diving into a topic that affects not only our performance as endurance athletes, but also our health, insulin sensitivity, and insulin resistance. Insulin plays a key role in how our bodies use and store energy, and whether we respond to it well or not so well can shape everything from long-term health risks to how we fuel and recover from training. We'll unpack what these terms mean, why they matter for everyday athletes, and how we can tell if we're moving in the right direction. So, Paul, can you start by explaining in simple terms what insulin does in the body and why it's essential for athletes and non-athletes?
Yeah. So insulin is your, well, they say it's one of the key hormones, like it's just a keystone kind of hormone in the body. And it's really, you know, controlling and dictating metabolism. It's produced in your pancreas and specifically in the islets of Langerhans, they say. And basically it's pushing out the pancreas, it's pushing out insulin into the bloodstream, and it's helping move your sugar, your glucose, into the cells of the body. It's basically telling whether to go into the cells or come out of the cells. And specifically the cells it's going into is like glycogen, muscle, and some fat as well. So that's the key thing. And it's, so basically you eat your food and then inevitably there's usually some glucose in that food, and right around the bloodstream, the islets are pushing in insulin at a level that's proportionate to the amount of glucose that it sees, that it appears. So very sensitive in terms of its regulation. And yeah, that's what it does. And if you don't, like, we know we have type 1 diabetics that they can't produce insulin. And when they, like, it's life-threatening if they can't produce that insulin, because then they're left with all of this spillout of glucose. And glucose is ultimately a toxin. So if it just kind of hangs around and doesn't go into the cells, it winds up forming substances in the body that are ultimately toxic. So it's advanced glycation end product, abbreviated AGE. So if you have a lot of glucose in your system all the time, it causes this glycated protein to form. You're made of protein, and basically you wind up developing aging elements in your body. So your skin doesn't stretch like it used to, which happens in all of us as we age, but this process of high glycemia speeds that, which, you know, we're all vain individuals, right? We've all got egos. You kind of want to keep that at bay as long as you can, right? So if you want to look young, you don't want to have high insulin all the time. If you have high insulin all the time, means you have high glucose all the time, means you got these advanced glycation end products in your body all the time.
That's super interesting and depressing.
No, I'm checking my skin, seeing what happens here.
Well, depressing for me too, because I reflect on my own, you know, really, I got the info wrong when I was taking sports science in university, and I was being told that I could have as much sugar as I wanted in my diet because it was good for my muscle glycogen levels. And that was what was key for me to perform. So I was like, I was all in. It's like 2 liters of Coke a day, no problem. Terrible, right? So imagine all the advanced glycation end product work I was doing there at that point. Not good. So fortunately, I saw the light in time, and did some reversing. And if you're listening, you can do that too.
You're still looking pretty young.
Cheers. But again, I don't think I'll show you some photos, MJ. I wasn't. So I was aging. I had a good little tummy on me and everything. It was pretty, it's remarkable. I know, yeah. But we're all like that. We're also, remember that every cell in your body gets turned over every 6 months. So you are what you eat, and you can do that too. So if you want to be a certain way in 6 months from now, you can. You just have to change the food. You will be a byproduct of the food that you consume in the next 6 months. So think about that, the listener. That's whatever's in your you're having for dinner. Those nutrients, those micro macros, polyphenols, everything will go in towards making you who you are in the next bit. So what do you want to be? Think about that when you're going down the grocery aisle. I don't know, did I miss anything there, MJ?
Yeah, basically, if you don't have enough insulin to open up those ports into the muscle cells or cells, you end up all that glucose just in your bloodstream and you get high blood sugar.
Yeah, which you don't want, right? So yeah. You want to have good control of your blood sugar levels. Yeah, and I think you know this. We all have these different periods of hyper and hypoglycemia. Right. And hypoglycemia means you've got low blood sugar. And that's a problem because you definitely feel really low in energy. Mom sometimes feels hangry if she's hypoglycemic. Right. So that's a low. But hyperglycemia is a lot harder to perceive, but it's still there. A lot of times people feel anxious when they're hyperglycemic.
So the more glucose comes into the system, the more insulin is released?
Yeah. In a healthy working pancreas, okay. Islets combo, then it's one-on-one, which is why you can use those things like CGMs, constant blood glucose meters, as a surrogate of how much insulin's being produced, likely, right? Like you're not measuring insulin, but if all of a sudden you go and have a Dairy Queen Blizzard. I know that's one of the biggest ones. My buddy wears a CGM often, and he says, yeah, when he went to with his daughter to get a Dairy Queen Blizzard, holy cow, he just had his blood glucose in milligrams per deciliter was up to 200, I think, which is huge, massive surge. I think typical normal is sitting around 90. So yeah, it was just off the charts with that. So yeah, that's his insulin level would likely be high as well. And I think, the key thing that you want to consider is that when insulin's really high, it's not just the driver for storing blood glucose. It's also going to be the big driver for storing fat. And so it puts everything into storage. And it's ultimately the problem, one of the key problems for modern day society in terms of over fat. We had Phil Maftone on the podcast. He talks about over fat, right? So it's it creates that central adiposity development and drive for storing more fat.
So a few times I've come to this question from athletes who are training for marathon or training for something long distance, and they keep putting on weight. Is this related to, eating a lot of carbohydrates on their longer runs, longer rides, and maybe getting a little too much glucose in their bloodstream that is not being used muscles, and then it turns out too much excess energy, and it gets stored as fat, and they're complaining, I'm training so hard, why am I just gaining weight?
Yeah, that's it. So ultimately, we now know, right, that that you can't outrun a bad diet. So it wasn't always. And again, we talked about our young upbringing. You don't see this as much. You don't see the hidden fat that's in the back of very fit athletes, young athletes. But, and again, I only know this from my own experience. So I got to about 35 and I was still having the high carbohydrate diet, maybe not too high carbohydrate, but too much sugar in my diet ultimately, right? And then I had the same sort of problem where I was just carrying a lot more excess body fat around and I could no longer get lean ultimately. So that's the problem is just, I mean, sugar is the key one, right? So we don't want to villainize carbohydrates. There's healthy carbohydrates, of course. There's so many, you know, fruits and vegetables, and that's all carbohydrates. But it's like if your sugar level is high, and then if your quantity of processed food that usually comes with unhelpful carbohydrates at the same time, and these are always, these tend to be spiking your blood glucose level and then spiking your insulin level and leading to the problem that you just described, MJ.
So let's talk about the difference between being insulin sensitive and resistant on a cellular level. What does that mean?
Yep. So if you're insulin sensitive, are basically as that insulin molecule passes by your cell, it fits like a key into a lock and it opens up the lock and the door, and then the glucose goes into the cell. That's being insulin sensitive. That's normal, natural. That's the young phenotype. In the older phenotype, that's, you know, it's seen insulin all its life. It's had these, you know, these issues and stuff. You start to develop, insulin resistance. In other words, I guess it's just like, it can be anything in the body that you become resistant to it, but it's like, it's kind of bored of the old insulin. We have high levels of it all the time, all around here. And it gets tired of, and it doesn't really know what to do with all that insulin. And it just becomes a little bit more sluggish and it doesn't respond as it used to. And as a result, that insulin just doesn't work as well. And sugar levels stay high and insulin just doesn't have the same sort of effect. So, and this relates to what we call metabolic flexibility. So your ability to process carbohydrates appropriately. Yeah, I think that's it.
Is there a way to know that you're getting a little tired of that same old insulin, or without, you know, any tests or?
Well, I think it relates to what you just said before, MJ. It relates to that. That fat isn't going away like it used to when I used to train the house down. For whatever reason, that's still hanging around. Mm-hmm. So that's a key signal that something might be off, and you're becoming less sensitive, more resistant.
Are there other early warning signs of insulin resistance besides the fat not going away?
It's really around the adiposity. It's the performance goes down as well too. So you're not as able to, we talked about in the last podcast, the adaptation energy. So you're not as easy to adapt to the training. So you don't feel like, you know, your build phase isn't going to be as effective anymore because you're just not, yeah, you're not like the fat metabolism as the base is what drives the adaptation. So if you're getting overtraining more, like a lot of fatigue, that's what Phil Maftone and I have coined before, the unhealthy athlete, right? Like athletes look fit and healthy, but in a lot of contexts, they're not. There's an underlying like base level of chronic fatigue that sits within that athlete. So, and this is, it usually spills over as a metabolic issue with the problems around the adiposity, because you're no longer able to take the fat out of the adipose stores, and you've only got the one way driver into the fat. And that comes with all these cascade of other issues as well, including like something called reactive oxygen species, free radicals, like a poor immune system that just doesn't work to clean things up anymore in you, and usually poor sleep. So any of these sort of symptoms relate to this insulin resistance.
Paul, is this an age thing? Do older people, you know, does it become more of a problem as we get older, or is it simply too much sugar on a constant basis, or both?
Kind of both, Paul. Yeah, okay. Because again, I think it's we arrive on the planet, you know, and then we're get exposure to sugar and insulin throughout our life, right? And then the longer we're exposed to that from an age standpoint, or the intensity of that exposure, right? If in the case where you're mainlining sugar all the time, like I used to do. Honestly, like I was addicted to Coca-Cola or Pepsi during university. And I actually thought that I could, because of all the training that I was doing, I could totally get away with that. And it would just be totally fine. Like I had my facts wrong. So yeah, so I had a high intensity ultimately of glucose on my cells a long time. And it was, it took me a while to figure out that I couldn't outrun the high sugar diet. So either or. So again, also with age as well and time, you're going to have a harder time kind of processing these as well. But it's all correctable. That's the cool thing that I discovered is that, you know, I could pull that out, totally swap my diet and become insulin sensitive again, even though I was insulin resistant. The other thing that happens too is high blood pressure. So I also had high blood pressure. So I actually went with anxiety to the doctor. I was working at High Performance Sport New Zealand with the Olympic program there. And the combo of the stressful job leading the program in physiology alongside of the high sugar diet. And I went, I actually had to go and get things tested out. I couldn't believe my blood pressure was like 135 over 81, 82. So I had mild hypertension. And this was I was like a 38-year-old worker. That's a pretty young worker, you'd sort of think, with the central adiposity just starting to kind of develop. That high blood pressure kind of came in there as well. Swapped the diet, same sort of time around Tim Noakes was doing that. And it was really quick, the adaptation for me. After swapping the diet and getting rid of the sugar, that was the main thing, just taking the sugar out and then just going to a more of a whole food kind of diet, but certainly lower on the carbohydrate side. That worked for me. And I've sort of never looked back. It's always what I love. I love consuming now. It works so much better for me. And I'm pretty lean individual and still fighting fit. So yeah, it can be completely reversed.
Why should everyday endurance athletes care about whether they're insulin sensitive or resistant, even if they aren't diabetic? And you've kind of answered this already, but I want to kind of drill down a little bit further. Why do we care?
Yeah, I think it just goes to your health at the end of the day. And even if you're an athlete, you might still be jeopardizing your health if you're kind of sabotaging that training and having sugar all the time. It's like, it's remarkable. You know, I'm working with Luke Evans, who won the Ironman Canada, right, with Athletica. And, you know, he was really of the belief, you can listen to that podcast, that, you know, he had to have sugar that sort of fueling all of the sessions. And a lot of people have that same belief. And then it takes a little bit of experimentation and sometimes some coaching to realize that you don't. You really don't know what you're missing until you actually remove it, I guess, and remove that practice and realize that you don't really have to do things that way necessarily. But it's not easy.
It's also a little bit of an emotional issue, and we get a little bit pushback about, you know, talking about low carb and not, you know, taking 90 grams of sugar on people's rides or runs. Like if you're someone who is gaining weight when you're training, you can kind of like, even if you don't believe in, because belief comes into picture, right? It's our nutrition. We're all experts what we eat and how our body works. But if you're somebody who is gaining weight when you really shouldn't, because you're working hard, training hard, and you're aging, like you can kind of have a think about, do you really need to fuel with gels or sugar, or can you switch to natural carbohydrates, or even just like reduce the carbohydrate intake that you do take on your high intensity sessions? You know, also lifestyle factors, like when we get kids, our activity level drops if you're not, you know, careful. You gotta like take the lifestyle activity into account, your training into account, and what you put in your mouth, and then kind of get a picture of why are you, you know, gaining weight if you're somebody who's gaining weight, right?
Yeah, for sure. Sure. And again, huge empathy to the parents out there. And again, I'm a parent as well. So I know that, you know, kids will gravitate towards carbohydrates and sugar type foods. So they're around your house often, you know, and they just find they find their ways around, right? And then they're, you know, food's on the table. It's easy just to kind of grab that. So it's really, I've spoken to so many Athletica users or otherwise that want to kind of give this a go, but it doesn't fit with the lifestyle, and especially, you know, kids at the same time. Empathy there, it's not an easy one. It might have to be a work on project, and it might have to be a little bit of a willpower one. You know, I don't have the answer for every individual context that's out there. You've got to sort of figure that out yourself. These are the principles. These are things you should watch out for. And again, and the more you can sort of switch towards a whole food alternative and stay away from the treaty little snack things that, you know, and processed packaged stuff, the better you're going to be off. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. How does exercise, especially endurance training and strength training, affect insulin sensitivity?
It helps it. Okay. The big sink that you've got to absorb your carbohydrate amount comes from is the skeletal muscle, right? So, and then the second is the liver, but you really want to build that sink as big as you can make it. So the more you in both endurance train and strength train, the more you, you make a larger bed sink that you can take in that glucose. Tim Noakes actually feels that's the key role of the skeletal muscle now, as he's continuing to go down this path. The its job there is to store that carbohydrate for us. So that, because again, as mentioned, it's a little bit of a toxic substance as well. But whilst vital for the brain, in terms of at least getting a certain amount in there, it is in too high levels. Not a good thing. Remember that the liver's job is to, it's like the orchestra leader, right? Like it's the conductor of the orchestra, and it's the liver is kind of pushing out the amount of carbohydrate, glucose and fat and ketones just to the right amount that it can. So you've just, you've got to, back to your question, Paul, you're talking about what role does the exercise play? Well, yeah, it's really, really good for it, because back to the key and lock analogy, the insulin was moving up an opening called GLUT4. And what exercise does, when you move your muscle, calcium is used in the process of moving the muscle. And calcium actually also is another trigger for an internal movement of the GLUT4 membrane to the membrane. So it's another means of actually opening up the sink to bring glucose in. So this is why, you know, anyone ultimately, and even in my context as a young athlete, because I was training the house down all the time, I did get away with it for a long, long time, because you're always exercising. So then the GLUT4 is always kind of open in the cells, and therefore, you know, there a lot of glucose is going straight into the cells, and you're maintaining with a load of exercise, you're maintaining at least a certain level of glycemia where it's not too hyperglycemia. But again, over time, you usually can't keep that same level up. So yeah, to your question, Paul, it's instrumental. It makes a big difference on both ends, both the strength and the endurance training through the GLUT4 independent production.
And that's why it's really, really good to go for a little walk after you eat supper. And that's where, sure, like small kid parents, they struggle, because, you know, like you eat supper and then it's bath time and bedtime.
Yes.
You know, it just comes creeping in. But the strength training, I want to double tap on that. Like, imagine if you can grow your sink bigger, you can kind of, you know, improve your situation. But what really happens with age and kids and all the low activity in our everyday life is that we also lose muscle mass. So our sink gets smaller. So that's why, like, I am so dedicated to keep my muscle mass up as long as I can. And that's what, you know, like our parents used to do. They owned farms and they worked in the farms and, you know, they had muscle mass longer than we do. Our generation is doomed.
Not necessarily doomed, just have to have awareness of this, and you need to emphasize these important behaviors, like you're just kind of mentioning, like going for the walk after dinner, strength training, doing everything you can to hold on to that muscle mass. And recognizing that all these mechanisms are sort of sitting around there.
From the endurance athlete perspective, like, we often skip, the first session to skip is strength training. If you think about insulin sensitivity, again, if you're somebody who is training a lot and then gaining weight, that would be the last session I would skip, the strength session.
Yeah.
Just because I want to keep the sink as big as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
Along that line of thinking, so if somebody learns or suspects that they might be insulin resistant, what are some of the steps they should take in training, diet, lifestyle? What should they be changing? What would be your first top five things, you know?
Oh, I would scan your diet and ask yourself, am I ingesting sugar maybe too much in my diet? Really look at the ingredients that you're having. And then second, you know, remember that the master conductor is the insulin, right? Like, that's the key regulatory hormone. That's not debated. So that's the key one you want to look at. And the only way really you can up your insulin level is through the diet. Stress plays as well, because stress causes for cortisol release, which is a glucocorticoid. Basically, it causes for a breakdown of, it causes your liver to push out more glucose, and then you get more insulin. But either way, stress and sugar are the two biggest culprits. And usually when you're stressed, what do you feel like? You're usually craving a sweet, right? So it's a vicious sort of circle and cycle. But I would do that analysis first. And then, I would go back to the Mickey Willenden podcast that we did and really look at, you know, what are some ways that we can potentially curb and change? And she was recommending, you know, if you want to stay away from the carb and fat debate, no problem, but up your protein level. And, you know, that's usually a really good way to make a big change and, you know, create satiation. You're satiated. You're not hungry. That's the key problem, right? Is that your body is often hungry. And if you're hungry, you should be eating. That's the apostat that's telling you something that you're missing. Usually it's a micronutrient deficit. And a lot of times with the protein source, you're getting a lot of the micronutrients that are kind of coming in there, and you curb the satiety signal. And that just calms and helps things so much. Exercise is another one, right? Like the tube exercise also usually creates a reduction in the hunger too, because it naturally does that. And through the, you know, the ketones and fat that's usually put out there when you exercise. So I think those would be my top ones, Paul, is like, sugar check, stress check, protein level check, exercise check. I probably got four. Maybe MJ, you got a fifth in there for me?
Strength training.
Ah, nice one.
There we go.
Of course. But Paul, I want to double that what you said there. Exercise decreases your appetite. It's not always. I remember when I was...
Only meant in the acute phase. So yeah.
Yeah, like I remember doing long rides in the Dubai desert there, and I was constantly hungry. And I would, like, every 20 minutes I would eat something because I was just hungry all the time. But I was doing things a little differently back then.
Yeah, you were having a lot of gels, right? And these things?
Oh, yeah, chocolate bars, candy, grapes, anything that I could have, I would eat.
Yeah, so for sure. I mean, it's like your small glucose pool, right? It's just like, it's so small and it's kind of battling. And it's just, you don't have the fat levels, the base to be able to handle the exercise there. So yeah, like that's almost like you're bonking all the time, we say, right?
Yeah.
Like, Paul would know that in the cycling context.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. And again, if you're bonking all the time, you're probably deficient in your lower level base and your ability to burn fat. So if you're going to do a metabolic test, right, your crossover point, and that's when we're looking on the test and we're looking at how much fat you're burning and carbohydrate you're burning progressively up the higher levels you go, you have a really early crossover point and you're going almost straight to carbohydrates as, you know, after you hit like 40% of VO2 max, which is really low.
Right.
And you should be up towards, you know, 60 or 70% ideally before you're crossing over. And when we say crossover, we're talking about an equal proportion of fat and carbohydrate that's being burnt in the test.
Mm-hmm.
So on a standard metabolic test.
So I definitely wasn't able to tap into my fat stores then. But would you then recommend starting experimenting with faster training to improve that?
Yeah, definitely. And again, we just touched on it in the last podcast. We spoke about the periodizing your nutrition. So yeah, that's a great place to kind of start. Now, if you're listening to this and you're freaking out about even contemplating a fasted training session in the morning, probably tells you that you might benefit from that actually. But and how do you do it? So how do you do your fasted sessions, MJ? What do you do?
I get my coffee, so yeah, a little bit of a wakey-wakey, and then I head out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 100% the same. So it's like, yeah, I know I've got a ride planned with either myself or a buddy, and it's like set the alarm, coffee first, use the toilet, out the door, and you're just prolonging the fast, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you finish the workout, you should feel pretty good in that workout too. And then, yeah, and of course, my coffee's black. MJ's she might have a bulletproof or whatever she has, but it's like, yeah, it's like, it's sort of a lower carb sort of thing. And then, yeah, a big breakfast when you get home, and just even changing that, instead of having breakfast before versus after, it's like you're prolonging the fasted period of time. Like that's the window where you've been under low insulin level from your morning, right? Again, like whenever you have your dinner, whenever that is in your life, maybe it's 6 or 7 o'clock at night, whatever it might be, like you're not eating past that time, and then you're fasting right through the night, and then prolonging that fast, like you're moving over to, say, you're not going to eat till 9 or 10, you've almost had like a, you know, 14-hour window or more where you're not eating. And that's like a period of time when insulin is low. And when insulin is low in your body, it's signaling for you to replace the fuel that you used to use with not with glucose, but with fat. So you're increasing your fat metabolism by doing that method.
Mm-hmm. What about, not this is not technically fasted, but what about like if you eat eggs or very like high protein, right?
Yeah.
Same thing.
The insulin response is really, the glucose response and the insulin response is pretty low to that. So that's a great alternate. And I should also add, like we mentioned about the continuous blood glucose monitors, but if you have any doubts about this, try to see if you can get your hands on one of those things, because they'll tell you, you'll learn so much from it. If you have the resources to be able to do it, you will learn a heap in terms of the foods that you respond to, in terms of those that are spiking your glucose and insulin, or the stress elements in your life that are causing that. And yeah, like you're an individual listening, and you will find out so much about that whole process if you do that.
Thanks for listening today to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Take a moment now, subscribe, share, and let's keep navigating this endurance adventure together. Improve your training with the science-based training platform Athletica and join the conversation at the Athletica Forum. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Warlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass Podcast, your North Star through the sometimes complicated world of training for your endurance sport. We appreciate your comments and training questions and your 5-star reviews. For a deeper dive into the science of endurance sports, listen to the Training Science Podcast and check out the adaptive AI training platform athletica.ai. Thanks for listening.